You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, February 6, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Robert Kuttner, the American prospect, on the president's task force to get to the bottom of the financial crisis, or I should say, perhaps bring prosecutions against the financial crisis. This interview was one I did for this weekend for Ring of Fire. I think you'll enjoy it. With an update on the deal that is being pushed by the administration amongst the 50 state attorney generals. Looks like it might be going forward. U.S. government closes its embassy in Syria. UN rejects, or I should say, China and Russia vetoed a draft resolution demanding Syrian President Bashar al-Assad stop the killing of his own people. That is probably the fallout of NATO expanding the mandate that the UN provided to protect citizens in Libya. One of the problems with what NATO did and what this country did in superseding that mandate, I think we had spoken at the time, that was one of the downsides of how far the U.S. government went beyond simply protecting the citizens of Libya from Gaddafi. Also on the program today in the Senate, a vote to essentially to reauthorize the FAA, but it's not a clean bill. The bill includes an attack on unions, and unions are pissed. We will talk about that later in the program. Corporate taxes at an all-time low. Got a good example of where this anti-corporate tax ideology comes from. It's not even an example. It's blatant. Stunning. And, of course, there was the Super Bowl yesterday, which was highly problematic. My poor daughter went to bed last night, excited. I think the Patriots were up. This morning, I had to tell her the Patriots lost. Her response, Patriots didn't try hard enough. They didn't try hard enough. That's why they lost. I don't know. I don't know if I can agree with that assessment.
They just didn't want it as badly as the Giants did.
It was a disappointing outcome. I don't know. I'm not going to say any more about it, frankly, because it's too problematic. But got to feel bad for a kid who grows up in New York, feels the pressure to support the rivals of New York. She told me that she was going to tell her friends that she likes the Giants. I told her that was all right. It's just sports.
Rush Limbaugh was in the Patriots owner's
box. And then there was that, which was far more even. That was even worse. At least they got a picture of him picking his nose.
They got their just desserts in losing the Super Bowl.
It's hard for me to argue with that. You bring Rush Limbaugh into your box. Fine, have Stephen Perry there every week for whatever reason. But you bring Rush Limbaugh into your box, well then maybe you do deserve to lose. The bright spot, of course, was to see, was this ad. Let's play this ad. You have Clint Eastwood, former Republican mayor of Carmel, California, come out with a sort of a creepy ad for Chrysler. But it makes the point, again, of the success of one of the best things that the Obama administration did was to move forward with their bailout of the auto industry, saving at least 1 million jobs, probably closer to 2 million, and essentially saving the U.S. auto industry and all the subsidiary jobs that go along with that. For every major car company you have, whether it's GM or Chrysler, you have literally hundreds, if not thousands, of subsidiary companies, smaller companies that provide parts, that provide engineering services, that provide all sorts of tangential services, not to mention all those companies and businesses, small businesses, that rely upon the hundreds of thousands of workers in Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, I guess, Ohio, who work for these car companies. So let's hear this ad.
It's halftime. Both teams are in their locker room discussing what they can do to win this game in the second half. It's halftime in America, too. People are out of work and they're hurting. And they're all wondering what they're going to do to make a comeback. And we're all scared because this isn't a game. The people of Detroit know a little something about this. They almost lost everything. But we all pulled together. Now Motor City is fighting again. I've seen a lot of tough eras, a lot of downturns in my life, times when we didn't understand each other. It seems that we've lost our heart at times. The fog of division, discord, and blame made it hard to see what lies ahead. But after those trials, we all rallied around what was right and acted as one. Because that's what we do. We find a way through tough times, and if we can't find a way, then we'll make one. All that matters now is what's ahead. How do we come from behind? How do we come together? And how do we win? Detroit's showing us it can be done. And what's true about them is true about all of us. This country can't be knocked out with one punch. We get right back up again, and when we do, the world's going to hear the roar of our engines.
Yeah, please, that's enough.
Yeah, it's halftime, America.
Yeah, it's halftime, America.
Half's about to begin.
We came together as one. Actually, no. Actually, we didn't. Republicans still decry. Your own party still decries that bailout, which saved that industry. Well, that's all right.
Yeah, I didn't quite remember that time and where we all came together and fixed. I don't remember that at all.
Let's not get so specific.
Gran Torino.
Let's not get so specific. Now, all right, Mitt Romney's not. Okay, it doesn't matter. The point is, I had some tough times. Do you remember those Every Which Way But Loose commercials? They did well at the box office, but honestly, I started with a monkey. Three times. I think the monkey got nominated for an Academy Award. What are you going to do? And then Fatal Attraction stole
play Misty for me. I never got any credit for that.
I'm sorry. I'm a huge Clint Eastwood fan, and I don't know what to tell you, but it was fascinating that, just there didn't seem to be much indication or realization.
It was actually the government bailouts that helped us. And, of course, Cerberus, the holding company that bought Chrysler, knew that they'd get that bailout. But what are you going to do? The head is over a barrel. And they're paying me a lot of money to do this ad. And it's easier than doing a movie, believe me. My age, I don't want to really get out there and 6 o'clock calls. Forget about it. I'd rather hang out, overlook the Pacific Ocean. Anyways, screw you, Mitt Romney. You want to pay me? I'll do a commercial for you, too.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will have that interview from Robert Kuttner, and I will follow up with the latest on the foreclosure deal, or I should say, the U.S. Attorney General's deal on robo-signing. It looks like it's going to happen after all. It's also coming in the wake of Attorney General Eric Schneiderman suing three major banks over that very issue, which should be an indication that if this deal gets made, the protection from liability to these various banking institutions is fairly limited. Otherwise, Attorney General Schneiderman probably would not have gone forward with this suit if he intends to sign off on this deal. We'll be right back with Robert Kuttner from the American Prospect. And now, Robert Kuttner from the American Prospect. Let's pick up now, just for our audience who may not know the backstory here, because coming out of the State of the Union, my feeling was that the most important, the most relevant news, regardless of the Republican primary, regardless of anything, I think, was announced during the State of the Union. It was the formation of the new financial fraud unit. I was pretty skeptical at first. My skepticism over the past week and a half has waned. But tell us, what is that unit and why was there reason to be initially skeptical?
Well, those are the right questions. Okay, so this is a new unit to get to the bottom of what caused the collapse and what criminal liability there might be on the part of the big banks or the securitizers or the mortgage servicing firms. I mean, it's what we have all been waiting for more than 3 years, serious criminal prosecutions instead of kind of weak civil settlements letting the bad guys off the hook. And there has been a task force on prosecution of financial crimes in existence since November 2009, and it has done almost nothing. So the interesting question is, why did President Obama do this now, and why did he appoint Eric Schneiderman, the New York State Attorney General, probably the most progressive and independent-minded state AG in the country, although there are three or four other really, really good ones who have sided with Schneiderman. Why did Obama do this now, and how much authority is Schneiderman really going to have? And
Let's go back to talk about Schneiderman's bona fides. Let's talk right. about the attempts by the administration that have been ongoing for really most aggressively and publicly for the past 6 to 8 months to get them to sign on to a 50 statewide settlement that has been orchestrated ostensibly by the Attorney General of Indiana, Miller. He has been working on a settlement. Tell us about that settlement, and then let's bring it into those five attorney generals who have basically said they wouldn't sign on to it.
Right, but let me back up one step, if I may, because I think the settlement is sort of one part of the three reasons why Obama had to do this. The settlement talks were stalemated. I'll come back to that in a second. But two other things were going on. I mean, first of all, Obama has made this famous pivot to a more populist stance, and what is more populist than going after the big banks? So that's motivation number one. Motivation number two is that the housing mess, much bigger than these settlement talks, just the macroeconomic drag of, you know, more than 30% of houses being underwater in terms of their mortgage, housing values having dropped, having wiped out trillions of dollars worth of home equity, and it's like a lead weight sandbagging the recovery. So Obama needs to do something much, much, much bolder on housing. Now, that brings me to this particular problem with the settlement talks, which have been totally deadlocked thanks to the principled opposition of Schneiderman and Kamala Harris and Beau Biden and several others. Okay, what's this about? Well, basically, in the rush to turn subprime mortgages into marketable securities, the bankers and the investment bankers on Wall Street who were packaging these securities screwed up big time. They were doing this so fast, they went on automatic pilot with so-called robo-signers and a lot of other stuff. Actually looked inside of these securities that were mortgage-backed securities. A lot of them didn't have the mortgages in them that they claimed they had in them. And the paperwork was done so fast, or the electronic work in a lot of cases, that they neglected to give the ultimate purchaser the lien, namely the right to foreclose on the mortgage if the homeowner got behind in his or her payments. So the whole thing was a legal nightmare that was bringing the process of transfer of title and creation of these bonds and sale of these bonds and foreclosure, if necessary, to a complete screeching halt.
Now, wait a second. Let me just stop you here, because what we're talking about here is impacting people as they're being foreclosed now. Because the bank set up this alternative method, essentially, of recording these liens, bypassing the traditional county or municipal clerks that would normally do this. And this is one of the oldest tenets of property law. They developed their own system, which they called MERS, which essentially was almost a phantom company. It was almost a virtual system. And they're going into courts over the past two or three years. And some courts are basically saying, this is not legitimate proof that you own the chain of title. There is no chain of title, so we're not going to allow you to foreclose. So we have
not only that, but there's criminal fraud in what was represented to be inside these trusts that were created when you securitize a mortgage. So not only did they gum up their own ability to pass along title or to foreclose on a mortgage that was in default, but they left themselves open to criminal liability.
Okay, fair enough. So this deal had to do – what was the deal that was on the table by the attorney general in Indiana? And there was a lot of report over the past 6 months, and particularly leading up to the State of the Union, that administration officials, including Sean Donovan from HUD, were pressuring – these attorney generals who were holding out, like you say,
right.
Schneiderman, Beau Biden, Kamala Harris in California, Masto in Nevada, they were holding out. And they, of course, their states were sort of the most relevant states in these issues.
Well, sure. I mean, if all of these trust documents were created under the laws of either New York or Delaware, just for starters. And these happen to be the most populous states. Okay. So Sean Donovan from HUD and the Associate Attorney General and a lot of other Obama administration people really, really wanted this deal because the deal was, we will clean up your paperwork mess and wave a wand and make all this stuff kosher. And in exchange, you, the banks, will pony up $20 or $25 billion for write-downs of underwater mortgages. Win-win. Well, as Schneiderman pointed out, this is a terrible deal because, first of all, you don't want to let the banks off the hook for future criminal prosecutions because there was a lot of criminal misconduct. Secondly, if you look at the gap in the mortgage market, how much relief is needed? You know, it's more like $500-700 billion. That's why all these token programs that the administration has sponsored have been a drop in the bucket. They haven't solved the problem. Housing values are continuing to decline, and that is continuing to sandbag the economy. So given the potential liability and given the amount of damage that the banks did to the rest of the economy and given the state of the housing market, $20 or $25 billion, a drop in the bucket.
And Beau Biden, I think, was on TV last week basically saying the things that the banks were copping to were the low-hanging fruit.
That's right.
And the release from liability was far broader than that. And that
exactly.
is, you're basically giving away the prosecutor's number one tool, which is get them on the small crime and leverage that to start to unwind the larger crimes.
That's right. And these AGs said, no way. And basically, the administration had no leverage whatsoever on Eric Schneiderman to twist his arm to sign on. So I think what happened was they started talking with Schneiderman and asked Schneiderman, what would it take to get you to sign on to this deal? And after some conversations, I'm oversimplifying here, he essentially said two things. A much better deal that doesn't waive any future criminal liability on anything, including the creation of these trusts. And secondly, let's get serious about prosecuting some of these bad guys. So in the course of these talks, one thing leads to another, and they end up reactivating a task force and making him co-chair. Now, the two huge questions are they really going to let him run it? And what kind of resources are they going to give him? Because, you know, this stuff is so Byzantine. If you're going to really make cases, you probably need 1,000 investigators and attorneys and prosecutors of the sort that we had in the SNL scandal. And so far, Eric Holder, the attorney general, has announced that he is giving this new task force 55 people. Well, that's not serious.
And well, so Bob, we've got to take a break here. So when we come back, let's address these questions. One, is Eric Schneiderman going to get the resources he needs? Just how serious is he about it? And if it does sort of, if Schneiderman is able to get his way, what will that mean? Where are the possible places of criminality that he could pursue? We've got to take a break. We'll be right back with Bob Cuttner after this. So, Bob, when we took a break, we were basically had caught up to when President Obama appointed Eric Schneiderman, the New York Attorney General, to this new financial fraud task force. And there was a lot of progressives, a lot of people who've been following this these developments who were very skeptical. The question was, and I think you put it best in your piece, Eric Schneiderman, hero or goat? And at first, many people were very skeptical. But over the past week and a half, you've done a lot of reporting that has contributed to this. People have begun to see this as a success or potential success for those of us who want to see this type of bank accountability. What is it that you've learned from your reporting that makes you feel that Schneiderman is actually not capitulating to the administration's clear intent in the past, anyways, not to hold these banks criminally liable?
Right. Well, first of all, there's Schneiderman's own history. I mean, he's a genuine grassroots progressive as well as a very effective prosecutor. I mean, it was the New York Working Families Party, which is a left party, that more than anything else got him elected to be state AG. This is Elizabeth Warren on steroids. I mean, this is a genuinely principled progressive. But secondly, that's only his background. What's he actually doing? Well, he's made it very clear that if he doesn't get the resources and he doesn't take charge and if he's being used as window dressing, he's out of there. And, you might say, well, God, would a Democratic attorney general do this to the president of the United States in an election year? And if they're setting him up to undercut him, of course he would. And secondly, you notice that although they're still dickering about all the details of this supposed settlement, Eric Schneiderman hasn't signed on yet.
Right.
And he's not going to sign on until he gets this other stuff, the who's in charge question and the scale of manpower that he's going to get resolved to his satisfaction.
And I got to say, he went out on he was on MSNBC this past weekend, and he said, I mean, you know, for a guy to come out and show himself in public this quick after the situation in this type of situation and come out and say that if there's not concrete actions taken within 6 to 8 months, he's going to consider it a disappointment. So he's on record now publicly saying this. And this, I think it's hard to overstate how stunning this is, because this is a total reversal of what we've seen for the past 3 years.
Well, it is a repudiation of Holder, and even more importantly, it's a repudiation of Geithner, whether or not President Obama quite understands that. I mean, once Geithner in the first months of 2009 persuaded Obama that the best thing to do with the financial crisis was to prop up the big banks and pretend that their balance sheets were being mended and not prosecute them because that would be bad for confidence, that meant that the whole administration game plan was to give the banks a free pass. My fear is that he's waited too long. In other words, if we don't see some fruit from all this until the fall, maybe that's enough time to have some high visibility trials, but it's not enough time to extract financial settlement or fines, you know, in the range of hundreds of billions of dollars of mortgage relief. So you're not going to get macroeconomic benefit out of it in time for the election. And to the extent that that was one of Obama's motives, he may have waited too long. We reportedly there have been some subpoenas. I'd like to see some indictments announced, you know, within a month or two, because this really has to be fast-tracked if it's going to make a constructive difference on the housing mess.
Do you think, I mean, you know, you mentioned this and you just mentioned that you're not sure that Obama was fully aware of what the implications were of putting Schneiderman on here. I mean, I can come up with a half a dozen different scenarios that are all fairly Machiavellian and involve a certain amount of intrigue in this whole thing, because it seemed like this committee came together rather quickly, as late as the day before the State of the Union address. It was being reported that the Obama administration was hoping to have the deal that was coming out of for the attorney generals. They were hoping to have that delivered so that they could announce it on Tuesday night. They ended up completely taking a different tact. Do you think that this is? I mean, is it, how much of it is? They'd like to see some some perp walks in September, October. They'd like to be able to announcing they're going after the banks. How much of this do you think is Schneiderman, they brought him onto this committee and just underestimated his will? How much is it perhaps that maybe we're overestimating Schneiderman's will?
I don't think we're overestimating Schneiderman's will. I mean, there's nothing in it for him to be a patsy for the guys that he's been critical of. I think what happened was the political guys who were looking for Obama to demonstrate some populism and Sean Donovan and the people who were trying to bring this deal to closure, you know, put two and two together and come up with five. They said, gee, if we can just bring Schneiderman into this, we can close this deal and it'll make us look good. We'll prosecute some bankers. And, you know, this is not a president who is famous for hands-on follow-up. And there's a ton of infighting going on already. You can see in the difference between Holder's press conference on Friday and Schneiderman's MSNBC appearance on the weekend. I mean, Holder said, you know, there are a lot of things that are wrong, but they're not necessarily criminal. Well, that's exactly the opposite of the signal that you should be sending. So I don't think Obama, I mean, I'm speculating here, but I'm doing it by logic. I don't think he quite appreciated what he set in motion. That this thing has taken on a life of its own, and they're now in a situation where Schneiderman has a lot more cards than they thought he was going to have, and this is a guy who's tough enough to play them well.
Now, what is the value of Schneiderman? So, I mean, he is the Attorney General of New York State. They have all sorts of statutory and maybe less so resources to pursue these type of things because much of this financial stuff happens, like you said, out of New York and Delaware. What is the value of Schneiderman putting his name
what does he get?
Yes.
Well, in the blogosphere, there's been a lot of misunderstanding of his motivation. He's got the statutory authority to go after these guys. What he doesn't have is the ground troops. Mm. I mean, to do an investigation well, you need at least 1,000 people. And if the feds are serious about really going after the banks, you've got authority for tax fraud. You've got authority for fraud under the banking statutes. You've got authority to bring fraud cases under the Securities Act. You've got mail fraud. And each of these agencies that enforce these laws, you know, they have prosecutors. They have investigators. So if they're serious and they put Schneiderman in charge, he could have 10 times the manpower that he would have, that he has as the AG of New York State. That's what's in it for him. I think the other thing that's in it for him is that he extracts a much tougher settlement than the administration was willing to settle for on this sideshow, you know, the paperwork mess. And, you know, like anybody else, I'm sure he's got healthy ego strength and he gets to be a public hero. But I don't think this is mainly about vanity. I think this is about his desire to see justice be done.
And is it your sense that the other attorney general holdouts, I'm thinking of Kamala Harris in California, like we said, DeMasto in Nevada,
Coakley.
Martha Coakley in Massachusetts, and Beau Biden are on the same page? I mean, I saw Biden on, like I mentioned, on MSNBC 2 days after this announcement, and maybe I was reading into it, but the only person's name he didn't mention out of mentioning those four attorney generals was Schneiderman. And I wonder if he had that same skepticism right out of the bat. And I wonder if you have heard anything in terms of where his perspective is now.
My sense is that the two of them are working hand in glove and that they're cut from the same cloth. They're both deeply offended by this. And I think, you know, we just happen to have five or six very progressive attorneys general at the state level, thank God, and they see an opportunity to go after the banks who, you know, brought down the whole economy. Let's never forget that. I mean, this was criminal fraud that has created the worst catastrophe since the Great Depression, and so far these guys have gotten off very, very easy.
Bob Kuttner, thank you so much for spelling this out for us. And I guess we will have our more definitive answers 6 to 8 months from now, according to Eric Schneiderman's own publicly announced timetable.
I think you'll know a lot in 3 or 4 weeks. You'll know whether Schneiderman is operationally in charge, and you'll know whether he's got the manpower that he needs.
Real
and
pleasure
you'll,
talking
you'll,
to you.
You'll know from whether there's a settlement.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the New York Times today is reporting that a settlement, at least between the attorney generals and the banks, is in the offing. We've heard this before. Supposedly there's a deadline today. But it appears that at this point that California may be the holdout. It's unclear. And again, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that on Friday, Eric Schneiderman announced fresh mortgage lawsuits on Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo. The lawsuit says that employees and agents of these companies have repeatedly submitted court documents containing false and misleading information that made it appear that the foreclosing party had the authority to bring the case when, in fact, it may not have. This, of course, is the robo-signing where you have people signing affidavits on behalf of the banks hired to just basically sign documents saying that I have seen the documents that prove that my bank owns the note here and can foreclose. And in fact, they had never seen such things because they had not existed because of this entire process, this entity known as MERS, or MERS, which is the Mortgage Electronic Registration System. Schneiderman's press release stated that MERS, or MERS, that could be my French taking over, filed over 13,000 foreclosure actions against New York homeowners, listing itself as the plaintiff, but in many instances lacked the legal authority to foreclose and did not own or hold the promissory note, despite saying otherwise in court submissions. They go on to say that Mayor's indiscriminate use of non-employee certifying officers to execute vital legal documents has confused, misled, and deceived homeowners. MERS and its members have deceived and misled borrowers about the importance and ramification of MERS' role with respect to their loan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we shall see. This, obviously, if this deal precluded or provided some sort of immunity for the banks, you would not see the Attorney General file a lawsuit on the Friday before supposedly signing off to this deal, unless that deal did not include that. So the reports that this foreclosure deal gets closer, but it is limited enough that those attorney generals who seek to pursue this can. And my understanding, too, is that in this deal, there may be a most favored nations clause, which essentially says that if any of these attorney generals can get a better deal from the banks by pursuing other actions, all the attorney generals will, or all the states will. Now, of course, California and New York, Nevada, these are some of the biggest states for this stuff anyways. So it may be more or less moot after you have these biggest states get these deals, because the amount of these, the implications of these deals accruing to the other states is less. But so it'll be interesting to see what happens over the days to come with this deal. Meanwhile, we will go into the better half of the program in just a moment. A lot of pushback, or supposed pushback, or certainly pushback by the bishops. This new rule that the Obama administration has implemented, wherein all organizations, all institutions must provide, if they provide health care insurance for their employees, those health care insurance policies must include contraceptive devices without copay. Catholic institutions are up in arms about this. I will tell you why that is, one, I think a feeling not shared by most Catholics, and two, just a whole mess of BS. But of course, we're seeing a lot of this being played up in the right-wing media, and by that I also include Morning Joe. Speaking of Morning Joe, they had a historian on from Harvard to argue that we should definitely allow, and we will be involved in the attacks with Iran. We're hearing this drumbeat more and more. We will touch upon that in the better half of the program. Also a nice story about a high school student who has perhaps found a cure for cancer. But her parents were immigrants. So according to those same right-wingers who are so worried about the nature of a white America, we probably should not allow this benefit to accrue to white people. It would only be fair. Also, more on the corporate tax rate in this country. Corporations paid an all-time low in taxes, in part because of a business tax depreciation cut pushed by the Obama administration, which has been surprisingly successful. Not necessarily in creating jobs, but in getting businesses to buy more business equipment and thereby helping the economy. So I guess to the extent that it's created jobs, it's not with the companies that are actually getting the tax break. Folks, we're going to probably go to a new system in which I appeal for members in more concentrated ways. By that, I mean not every day asking in the same beleaguered way, please become a member. You listen to the show every day, don't you? It's 33 cents a day, if that, to support this program. And we need your support. We have a lot of members who are facing financial hardship. And it seems like almost every day someone writes in and says, I just simply can't afford it anymore. We've had an illness. I've lost a job. And we work out deals with those people, but we need new members to make up the difference and to continue to grow the show. So if you can become a member at majority.fm, I would appreciate it, but we need you to as well. So you can be responsible for this show continuing. And you can support the show in other ways, of course. If you buy junk through Amazon, use our link at the support the show button on our page, justcoffee.coop, coffee, tea, chocolate, organic, fair trade, employee owned. Get a 10% discount using the coupon code majority. Also, if you get the, even if you don't get the podcast through iTunes, go and give it a review. It really helps spread the word. The more reviews we get, the higher up on the page iTunes places us, more people see the show by accident, begin to listen, and hopefully become members and use the information they get here to help make America better. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. I'll take your phone call, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920, or Majority Live by Skype. You can IM me at Majority FM. I will be on Radigan today at 4 p.m. See you in the better half.